We're holding on Pehei Omid Bey's, the last line of the narrow lines. Continuing on various topics involving Dine Mominus and more specifically involving Ksubus, but in general talking about certain basic concepts in Dine Mominus. So the Gemara tells Omalei Rava Robin says to the son of Rav Chiya Ba'Oven, "Ta a malacham milsa malisa to have a omer avuch. Come, let me tell you a great thing that your father Rav Chiya Ba'Oven said. That your father said, Hod omer Shmuel. Now we have a din by way of background. We have a din that Shmuel said, Hamoicha shtar choiv l'chaver. If a person sells a shtar choiv to somebody else, so Reuven borrowed money from Shimon and wrote out a shtar to that effect. Now Reuven goes and sells that. Shimon the Malva goes and sells that shtar to Levi, so that now when the debt is collectible, then Levi will be collecting it instead of Shimon. If now Shimon goes afterwards and is moichel that shtar, is moichel that chov, mochel, then that works and the mechila takes effect, and therefore it comes out that Levi has now a piece of paper that's not really worth very much. Why that is, Tosfos discusses over here and in other places and different Rishonim discuss two major reasons why that should be. That a person is money. Why that should be that a person has the right to sell a shtar chayv and then to be moichel. One big explanation that a couple of the mafoshim that the Rabbeinu Tam talks about is now the question is basically like this: the concept that you can sell a shtar chayv and now you're selling the debt and now the other person has the right to collect that debt, is that daraisa or is that drabon? So one way of looking at it, Rabbi Tam holds that it's daraisa, and nevertheless. So you have a number of Rishonim, the Rambam and the Rosh, and one possibility in Tosfos is that the whole thing is only dirabanan. So since it's dirabanan, then therefore the seller has the ability to be moichelit. In other words, the Chachamim may have come up with the concept that you can sell a shtar chayv, but nevertheless, since on a daraisa level, of course, a lender can forgive a debt anytime he wants, then the Chachamim didn't take that ability away. The other explanation is Rabbeinu Tam says that actually the concept that you can sell a shtar is actually daraisa, but nevertheless, he explains, and other Rishonim after him explain in more detail, that still when you have a chayv, when you lend somebody money or otherwise a person owes you money and you're eventually going to collect the debt, you have kind of two different kind of shibudim that have been created. You have a shibud on his person that he has a responsibility to pay back that loan. We're going to call that later on in the Gemara mitzvah, the Freya Priyas Baal Chayv mitzvah. And then you have a shibud on the property. So in this case, he has the ability still to forgive the personal shibud that the other person has, and therefore automatically the shibud on the property goes away, and therefore the debt is not collectible. So in any case, there is a concept then that Shmuel said that it is possible to be moichel sort of thing. We're going to see in the Gemara soon that maybe after all, Shimon would have to pay Levi for the fact that he caused him a loss. We'll get back to that soon. But the point is that Reuven in any rate is not going to have to pay because Shimon was moichel it, even though he already sold the document and the debt to Levi. And Shmuel said, "Va'afilu yodash moichel." And Shmuel also said that that works even if a person yashin the document. So not only Shimon himself, but also Shimon's yodish could be moichel it after it was sold to Levi. Nevertheless, Rava tells Rav Chiya Ba'oven's son, Pehei Omid Bey is at the bottom. Rava tells Rav Chiya Ba'oven's son, your father, Rav Chiya Ba'oven said, Moidish Shmuel b'machneses shtar choy v'bayla. Shmuel would agree that when it comes to when a wife brings in a shtar chayv to her husband as one of the assets in the marriage, and then she goes and is moichel that she ain't moichel. In that case, then it's not then the mechila does not work, because his hand and her hand are the same. In other words, they both have an equal, they both have rights to this property. If it's nichsitzon barzel, if nichsitzon barzel, then they really belong to the husband now. So the wife doesn't have the ability to be moichel them. And if they're nichsim alug, then the husband has the right to payrus for them from them. So therefore, so in that particular case, we would say she doesn't have the ability to be moichel it. So now in this connection, so this is Rava informs your Chiba Oven son, you should know your father said this din. So now in this connection, the Gemara brings a story where this point bears on it. The Gemara says, Kriv said of Nachman's Vinsal Ksuba Betovas Hanav, a woman who was a relative of Rav Nachman sold her Ksuba for Tovas Hanav. Tovas Hanav is basically, in English, you would call it a gratuity. It means a small amount Now, when you think of it, what does it mean when she's selling her ksuba? Not the actual paper, of course, or maybe the paper. But the point is, in other words, what she's selling is the buyer will have the right to collect her ksuba in place of her. Now, you think about it, it's a contingent thing. It's a risky business. If she dies first, then there's no ksuba. The husband just inherits it from her. But if the husband dies first, or if he divorces her, then there's a ksuba to be paid out. So because it's risky, a prospective buyer is not going to buy it for very much. So all he's going to buy it for is Tovas Hanav. So in this case, that's what happened. She sold the possible future value of her ksuba for Tovas Hanav. Eventually, Igarsha. Eventually, this relative of Rav Nachman was divorced from her husband. Or Shchiva, and then afterwards, she passed away. Also, Kotavi lo lebrata. So now the buyers are coming and they want to collect the ksuba from the daughter. Now, why are they coming to the daughter? Why aren't they coming to the ex-husband? So the Rosh actually brings that we can say that the ex-husband, meanwhile, had passed away as well. So the daughter, there were no sons, only daughters. So therefore, the daughter yaushin from him. However, Rashi says differently. Rashi says that the daughter, they knew that the daughter herself is going to her father to collect the ksuba, to collect her mother's ksuba that she yaushin from her mother. Meanwhile, these other people are coming and saying, one second, your mother sold the ksuba to us. The reason why Rashi doesn't want to learn like the Rosh, that the father had passed away in between is because we're going to talk about a second in the Gemara about the possibility of her being moichelit. And the question is, can a person be moichel something where they themselves are both sides of it? You think about it. If she's moichel the ksuba, which she herself is in line now to Yarushin, is that valid? So Rashi can be taken the view that you can't do that. We said that a malva can be moichel a choiv, but he's not the one who owns it. He's not the one who owes it and the one who's in line to collect it. Unlike over here, where in effect she owes it to herself if she yaushin her father, because her father's estate is responsible to pay out the ksuba. So Rashi may hold that in that case it wouldn't be valid. She can't be moichel. Therefore, Rashi has to explain the father is still alive, and the only reason the buyers of the ksuba are going to the daughter is because they know that she herself is going to the father to demand the ksuba. So therefore, they figure they might as well go to her and tell her, one second, you can't demand it from your father. If your father is going to pay it out to anybody, it has to be to us. So Omalahu Rav Nachman. So now Rav Nachman says to them, meaning to his Talmidim Pashtus. Anyway, he says, Leka Lesvala Eitza, isn't there anybody who would give this woman the advice, the daughter, the advice to do as follows? Tezo Batechlo Ksubasa de Imal Gabe Avura, let her be Moichel the Ksuba, her mother's Ksuba, to her father. Because we just said when you sell a shtar choiv to somebody else, you can be moichel it. So therefore, she's now in line to be, and we said that even a yodish could. So she's the yodish, she would have been the yodish of the ksuba if her mother hadn't sold it. Therefore, she has the ability to be moichel it, because the equivalent of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi that we said before, the daughter here is standing in the place of Shimon. The people who bought the ksuba for Tovas Hanav are standing in the place of Levi. So let her be moichel to the father, the teresamine, and then she directly will be able to yaushin the ksuba from her father. So Rav Nachman said that to some people that it would be nice if somebody would give her that idea. Shama, she overheard that, Ozla Achilta, and sure enough, she did that. She went and was Moichel the Ksuba, and that way she's able to collect it now on the face of it. That means that the buyers have lost their investment. It means they were expecting to collect a ksuba, and now they lose everything. So first of all, we are going to talk about soon that maybe in fact she would be responsible to pay them for their loss. In which case, Tosfa says that in that case, then if she has to pay them for their loss, then what's she gaining from that? So Tosfa gives a couple of possibilities. One of them being that this daughter over here was actually a katan. So therefore, we can't be mechayev her to pay as a mazik. The Gemara is going to say soon, we have a concept called dinah d'garmi, where if you cause a hezek to somebody else, you're responsible to pay. But this daughter was a katana, and therefore you can't be mechayev her to pay. Another possibility, Tosfa says, is that maybe what it is we don't, if, even if we say that she has to pay the buyers, we wouldn't say that she has to pay them the full value of the ksuba that she prevented them from getting. All she would have to do is pay them the tovas hana that they had given her mother. So she still comes out ahead. She collected a ksuba of 200 zuz, let's say, and all she has to do is reimburse them the 10 zuz or whatever that they paid as for tovas hana. Anyway, so Omer Rav Nachman, so afterwards when Rav Nachman heard about it, he said, you know, I shouldn't have done that. Osino atzmeinu ka'urche adayonim. We made ourselves like lawyers, where, you know, it says in Pirkei Avos, Al tas atzmecha ka'urcha adayanim, a dayan is not allowed to help out one side in a din Torah. And he's saying, in effect, I did that by mentioning this idea, and then the daughter overheard it. So the Gemara says, Me'ikra ma'isavar l'vsoif ma'isavar. Okay, so what was Rav Nachman thinking originally that he gave the advice, and what was he thinking at the end? That he regretted doing. So the Gemara says, Me'ikra sava umribson holoisi salam. Originally, he figured, you know what, the Pasuk says you shouldn't hide from your own flesh, which means that a person has a responsibility of tzedakah towards his relatives. And in fact, the Ritzvah points out over here, you would have to say that the daughter was poor. So therefore, Rav Nachman was looking for a way for her to be able to collect some money. So he figured originally it's a matter of tzedakah. All of a soif sava, odim choshev shiny. But afterwards, Rav Nachman realized, though, on the other hand, it's different. On the other hand, it's different when an important person does it, because like this, he did it for his relative. Other people are going to learn to do it, even for non-relatives, and that wouldn't be appropriate. Okay. The Gemara says, Gufa, getting back to what we just said, we said that Shmuel said that if a person sells a shtar choyv to somebody else, and then he's moichel it, we say the mechila is valid. And we said Shmuel said even the Yodish could be moichel. So again, we said Reuven owes the money. Shimon originally was the one to whom it was owed and holds the shtar in his hand. He sells the shtar to Levi with the expectation that, and so now Levi has the expectation that eventually he'll be able to collect from Reuven. Now we're saying after the fact, Shimon can be moichel that shtar, and therefore Reuven doesn't have to pay anymore, and Levi ends up out the money. And we said that even not only Shimon himself, but his Yodish could do that. So the Gemara says, Omer of Huna Bredir Rishua, V'ipikeachu. Now, if Levi or Lekeach over here is smart and he wants to avoid that Shimon should end up doing that, Mekautish Leizuze, what he'll do is he'll jingle some coins in front of the Loiva, in front of Reuven. In other words, he'll offer Reuven some money to write him a new shtar, to write out a new shtar in his own name, in Levi's own name. And that way, in case Shimon decides later on, in case Reuven and Shimon later on decide to make a knunia, decide to make a trick between them that we're going to be moichel b'shtar, and then that way we'll cause Levi to lose, and meanwhile Reuven and Shimon will make some other arrangement between them for payment. Instead, Levi has a brand new shtar in his own name, so therefore even if Shimon is moichel the original one, Levi will still be able to collect from Reuven, and that'll prevent this knunia from taking place. So there is a way around. But the Gemara continues, Omer Amemar. So now Amemar says there's another wrinkle in this as well. Man de doin dinah d'garmi. Those opinions that say that we judge and we collect on the basis of dinah d'garmi, Magbi b'dmei shtar amalia. Then based on, according to that opinion, then actually, even if Shimon was moichel b'shtar, fine, you wouldn't be able to collect from Reuven anymore because Shimon was moichel it, but nevertheless, you'd still be able to collect the full value of the shtar from Shimon. So, because in other words, because he caused a loss to Levi, he sold him the shtar, and now he is moichel it, so he caused him a loss. Now the concept of dina de garmi, so the Gemara explains, so Rashi explains based on Gemara and Bava Kamma that in particular Reb Meir is the one who holds of the concept of dina de garmi. Now we know on the other hand there are places in Shas where it says groma benizikin potter. So there's an enormous machloikas among the Rishonim what the difference is between groma, where he's potter, versus garmi, where we're saying Reb Meir says he's chayev, and in fact the halacha ends up being like Reb Meir. There's many, many different explanations. And there is actually an explanation that some of the Rishonim say that it means you're always chayev for a groma. Those places in the Gemara where it says groma, benizik and potter, are talking about according to the other Tanoim against Reb Meir, and the halacha wouldn't be like that. Most of the Rishonim do draw distinctions between groma and garmi, though. Among others, there's the distinction. Is it something that the mazik did directly, that he did be a dayim, like in this case, for example, where he was moichalit, versus where he did something more indirectly? Is it something where the hezek is caused directly by his actions, or more indirectly? There's also some of the Rishonim learn there's a difference whether he did it deliberately or not. In particular, the Ramban wrote one of the Ramban's early Sfarim that was called Kuntras Dina de Garmi. It's a short Kuntras where he goes through these various opinions about what Dina de Garmi is and explains what the rules about it are. And then you have Achronim discuss it in greater detail. In any case, so Amemar is saying, if we follow Reb Meir's opinion, which in fact we do la halacha, then it comes out that Shimon, by being moichel the shtar, has caused a groma, has caused indirectly Levi to lose money, because Levi had bought a shtar that he thought is going to allow him to collect X amount, and now he can't because he was moichel it. So therefore, Shimon is going to be responsible to pay Levi after all. So here Tosfos also mentions that, again, maybe we're not going to make Shimon pay the entire amount of the shtar. Maybe we would only make him pay, so Rashi says we would make him pay the full amount, kol achoyv shaboy. But Tosfos brings as one possibility, maybe not, maybe he would only be required to pay Levi the amount that Levi actually paid. So if this is a choiv of $1,000, Levi might have bought the shtar at a discount, because again, certainly with a ksuba, he would buy it cheaper, because we said before, a ksuba, there's always the possibility that the wife dies first, and then there's no ksuba at all. But even with a regular choiv, you'd always buy it at a discount, because it's not 100% sure that you're going to be able to collect it. There might be cases where you can't, so therefore it's a bit of a risky investment, and therefore he'd pay less. So therefore, Tosfos brings up one possibility that maybe even if we make Shimon pay on the grounds of dinner to garmi, it would be only the amount that Levi paid rather than the full amount of the shtar. So that's if we say that we judge dinner to garmi. And he continues, man deloy doin dinner to garmi. On the other hand, the opinion that says that we don't judge dinner to garmi, the chachamim against Reb Meir, they would say magvi be dmei niyora ba'alma. They would say then, if Shimon is moichel the shtar, all we can do is collect from him the value of the piece of paper. Because then, in effect, Shimon can say to Levi, look, I sold you a piece of paper. Well, you have the piece of paper in your hand. So all we'd be able to collect from Shimon would just be the value of the paper. Because then, according to that opinion, we would say that the fact that he caused him a loss, the fact that Levi bought something which he thought was worth more, and now it turns out is worth less, it wouldn't matter because Shimon has the ability to be moichel the choiv. And again, we said before a couple of reasons why he has the ability to be moichel in the first place. You have different Rishonim talk about, is it because the whole concept of selling a shtar choiv is only drabanon, so therefore he still has the daraisa ability to be moichel it, or is it that even if we say that selling shtaris is valid daraisa, still he has the ability, Rabbi Natam says, to be moichel on the shibud haguf that goes along with it, and once the shibud haguf is gone, then so is the general, so is the rest of the shibud. So the Gemara says, Hava Uvda, it one time happened that there was a case where a shtar had where a shtar had been sold, and then afterwards the seller was moichel it. The kafye rafram l'Ravashi. So now, so Rashi explains that the din Torah about this was brought before Ravashi, and Rafram compelled Ravashi, meaning that he brought Ravashi tremendous numbers of proofs that Shimon should have to pay. The agli beki kshurul etzalmi. And he made, the upshot was that Rav Ashi was convinced by Rafram's proofs, and he wound up making Shimon pay like a beam that's going to be used for pictures. Meaning Rashi says, imagine you buy a beam of wood where you plan to draw pictures on it or make carvings on it or whatever. You're going to make sure that piece of wood is absolutely smooth. There's no cracks in it or nothing. So therefore, it's a figure of speech, meaning that he was medactic to the nth degree to collect the full amount from Shimon that he's supposed to. Again, according to Rashi, the actual written value in the shtar, and according to one possibility in Tosfos, maybe only the amount that Levi paid. But in any case, the point is, Rav Ashi, according to this, wasn't certain about it, and Rafram convinced him that it has to be that way. Rashi himself, by the way, brings in Bava Kama a different interesting explanation of this. He says what happened was Rav Ashi himself, when he was a boy, had one time burnt somebody's shtar. So now when he got older, then Rafram made him pay for that youthful act of vandalism by paying the full amount. Even though as a cotton, he wouldn't have been responsible to pay. But now that he was older, then Rafram told him that you can't get away with the fact that you were a cotton. You need to reimburse the guy for the full amount that you made him lose. Rafram is not famous in Shas, but he comes up here and there. There was a Rafram who was a Rosh Hashiva in Pumpadissa at the same time when Rav Ashi was in Surah. So it might be him, or it might be a different Chacham from a previous generation. By the way, before we go further, now that everybody who's here or was here yesterday, I need to correct something that I said yesterday. We talked at the end about shudda d'daini, and I was the idea that sometimes the dayanim have the discretion to decide. In a case we had over there, nechosa v'tuvia, and you have two claimants who both have an equal claim to it. And we said shudda d'daini, where we said that Tosfos says the dayan can decide on his own whom to give it to, that he doesn't have to consider who the mess would have wanted to, the dayan can just consider on his own, can just decide it on his own. And I mentioned something that Tosfos says elsewhere from Yerushalmi, that the word is actually shuchda the dayani, related to the word shoychad. So the Tosfos in Bava Basra that mentions that point actually mentions the point, does it mean that literally the other guy can give, one of them can give him shoychad to decide the case? Tosfos says actually no, not so much because given that the dayan can decide for whatever reason, then on the face of it, that should be valid. But Tosfos says the fact is a dayan is not allowed to accept payment b'chlal. So therefore, nothing to talk about. On the other hand, the Korban Eda on the Yerushalmi, there's a Yerushalmi later on in the Norma Sechta that mentions this din about shudda d'daini and calls it shuchta, and the Korban Eda, one of the Mephoshim on the Yerushalmi over there, actually does say that the Yerushalmi may hold that it literally means that he can give him shoychad, because so what? Given that the dayan can decide what on whatever basis, then if he takes shoychad to decide it in that case, then it's not so bad either. On the other hand, the Pnei Moshe, the other major Noisa Kalim, on the other major Mephodish on the Yerushalmi, seems to say that no, the Yerushalmi holds like the Bavli, it's up to the judge's discretion, but not that he can literally take Sheikhah for that. So the Korban Eda is saying in this one unique case, given that the Dayan can decide however he wants, like we said yesterday, he can even flip a coin or something, then the Korban Eda says it may not be so bad if he takes Sheikhah for it as well. But Tosfos specifically says that not. Tosfos says, at least according to the Bavli, there's no question that he can't do that just because a dayan is not supposed to be taking payment from any of the Bali dinim. All right, continuing the Gemara over here. Omun ameima meshmeid rav chama. Hai man de'ika leksubas ishu bal choy. Suppose that a person owes money to his wife for huksubah, and he also has a bal choy. He also owes somebody money. The islay ara the islay zuzi. Now, suppose that he has land, which can be used to pay off one of the debts, and he also has money. So the question is, which one gets which? So the Baal Choyv Mesalkinen LeBezuzi LeIsha Mesalkinen LaBa'ara. What we'll do then is, we'll give the money to the Baal Choyv to pay off his debt, and the woman will give the karka. In other words, if they want to do it the other way around, they could. If they all mutually agree. But if the Baal Choyv, for example, says, "I would rather have cash because obviously it's easier to deal with than karka, which I may not want as karka, and then I have to sell it now, and then I have the hassle of selling it and everything," then you have to give him. Then you have to give him money. And the reason is, haiki dine b'haiki dine. Each one goes according to their appropriate din. Meaning, the Baal Choyv lent money to begin with. So therefore we should give him back money. On the other hand, the woman mainly was relying on the shibud of the karka. She, after all, she didn't give anything when she got married. Rashi adds, even for example, she brought in nichsitza in barzel, but the fact is, those get combined together with the ksuba, and you have one big shibud on his karka. Now, we've talked about a number of times in the Masechta, eventually there was a takana of the Gaonim that says that the ksuba can be collected from the Talpilin as well, but the original, up to that point, the idea was the ksuba was meant to be collected from karka, so even her nichsitza in barzel, which fine, those may have been the Talpilin, but those end up getting incorporated into the ksuba, and therefore she expected a shibud of land, so therefore that's what she gets as land.
Doesn't the Gemara speak about somewhere that land is more secure, doesn't go anywhere?
Land is more secure, it's true, but on the other hand, the Baal Choyv may say, you know what, it's true, land is more secure. On the other hand, what do I need this piece of land for? I'd rather have money, which I can
right.
decide to...
Speaking yeah. about it's not her, because when you usually... We always learned that the shibud is always going to be on karka.
Well, the reason why the shibud is primarily on karka, especially in the case of ksuba, is precisely because of the fact that land can't be hidden or whatever. So therefore, she has more of a guarantee. She has more of a smichus das that she's going to be able to collect from that. Tosfos actually brings over here that Rabbeinu Tam says you have those three different rules. You have a malve, you have a nizek, and you have a sochir when you hire somebody to do a job. A malve was saying over here. So a malva was saying over here, if you have money, then you have to give him. If you have cash, then you have to give that to him. Only if you don't have cash can you give him karka. A nizik, you could give him karka even if you have money available. The nizik can't say, "I would like to have money." You can tell him, you know what, the Torah says after a mate of sadehu or mate of karma yishalim. So I'll give you land, which is idis, but I don't have to go and sell it and give you cash on the barrel head. And then by a socher, the din would be, even if he doesn't have cash, we would still tell him, go sell one of your properties or something and raise the money in order to pay the socher in money rather than having to make him accept land. Again, obviously, if the socher was willing to accept land, fine. Like in the famous story of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer in Shabbos over there, where he worked for him for 3 years. And then on Erev Yom Kippur, he says, "Give me my schar," and he says, "Give me land," etc. Fine. So if they mutually agree on it, of course. But otherwise, if the socher would rather have cash, then Rabbeinu Tam says, we would actually make the employer sell something in order to raise money to give him.
So a socher is in the way
the highest one as far as getting money, as opposed to the nizik is not entitled to cash at all if the guy wants to give him a karka, and as opposed to, we're saying, a malva, where you should give him money, but if you don't have, then you can give him karka, and that's good enough. Next, the Gemara continues, v'iloi ika el chad ara. What if the guy only has one piece of land, v'loi chazi el chad, and it's only big enough to pay off one of them, either the ksuba or the Baal Choyv, then which one takes precedence? So yeah, the Baal Choyv, yahabinim lay l'isha lo yahabinim la. Then the Baal Choyv takes precedence, and we give it to him. The reason is because shaloi tino delis. We don't want to discourage people from lending money. They're going to think to themselves, you know what? Why should I bother lending if I may not even ever be able to collect my debt? So my time a yosim asha ish roitz alisa isha roitz alinasi, because we know, as the Gemara says in many places in Shas, even more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married. So therefore, she's not going to be discouraged from getting married by the possibility that there might not be what to collect from. Now we did learn a couple of blocks ago that there's the concept of chinah. There's the concept that we want to make it more attractive for women to want to marry men, knowing that they can collect the uksuba, or vice versa. Tosfos brought the other possibility, that it means we want to make it more attractive for men to want to marry women, knowing that they have assets. But nevertheless, over here, Rashi is saying we're not concerned about chid. The fact is the Baal Choyv has a greater claim. Tosfos also points out the difference is when we talked a couple of blocks ago, we were talking about that the person had died. So therefore, so now as far as the Malveh, there's no real issue of Me'ilas Delis. Nobody is going to avoid lending money because the Loiva might die. It's uncommon enough that people die punked at a certain time that the Malveh should hold back from lending money for that purpose. But here we're talking about where he's alive and just doesn't have any nefasim, so we're concerned about Ne'ilas Delis, and that overrides the concept of Chida.
So if it's about Baal Chayv, and then there's the issue about her, she got married before
the death. So Rashi says that it would have to be if the shtaris both were written on the same day. On the other hand, Rashi says if she got married first, then she has the advantage. Tosfos disagrees and says that no, not necessarily. Even if she got married before the Baal Chayv, nevertheless, we still might say that the Baal Chayv's claim it takes precedence again because Shaloi Tino Delis, because we want to encourage people to lend money. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omelet a popular of Chama. Vade dam ritu mishmei de rava. So Rapapa asked Rachama, is it true that I've heard that you said the following? I want to know if it's true. Mishmei de rava, that you said in the name of rava. Hai man de maski bezuzi. If there's a person who owes money to other people, the islay ara, the person has a piece of land. But also Baal Choyv katova minei. The Baal Choyv is coming and demanding the payment of the debt. And the loiva says, go collect from my land. That I heard that you, Rav Chama, are saying in the name of Rava, Amrinale Zil Zabin at the Icy Havle, that we tell the loiva, you go and sell that property and bring cash to the loiva, to the Malveh. Is that true? Because that doesn't fit with what we said before. We said that if you have a choice between karka and money, then you give the malva money. But to go so far as to make the loiva actually have to go and sell the karka in the land in order to raise money for the malva, why? Omalei loy. So Rav Chama says, no, I didn't say any such thing in the name of Rava. So Rav Papa asks, Emily Gufa do Uda Hey Chamba. So what actually happened? There must have been some story involving this where you paskin. So you're saying you didn't say it as a general rule, but it must have been a one-off case. But what happened? Why was there one particular case where that happened? Omalei, so Rav Chama tells him that case was Tola Ma'osa Ba'ovik Kachavim Hava. That loiva had money available that he could have paid with, but he claimed that money is not mine. It was invested with me by a goy. So which was not true. Therefore, who also Shalai Kahagan, since he acted improperly, falsely claiming that this money belongs to a guy, Lafika Osaboy, Shalai Kahagan, therefore, in this particular case, I treated him not what it, according to the way the halacha usually says, once we show that the money is in fact not a guy's but his own, then I made him actually give the Malvin money, even though I made him sell karka if necessary to raise the money. Now Tosfos actually says Tosfos learns a little differently than Rashi. It's not that when Rav Chama told him to go sell the property, he said that it actually belongs to a goy. What happened was when the Malveh first demanded the payment, then the loiva claimed that the money that I have available actually belongs to a goy. Later on, by the time it came time to actually collect, Hitaka didn't have that money anymore, whether because he had spent it or whether because he did owe it to a goy and paid it to him or whatever. Nevertheless, Rav Chama said, since to begin with he lied, then therefore we're going to make him sell his karka rather than if he hadn't done that in the first place, then we would have told him, look, by the time it comes to collect the debt, you don't have cash anymore. Therefore, we're not going to make you sell karka, just give him the karka. But in this case, because he lied to begin with and falsely claimed that the money that he did have at the time actually belonged to a goy, then therefore we penalize him and we do it that.
That's more of a penalty.
Like so it's more of a penalty, stuff. Right. Okay. Another thing, on another point on this matter of paying a Baal Chayv. Omelet of Kahana Lera Papa. V'didoch te'amrit prius Baal Chayv mitzvah. Now, you, the Papa, hold that there's a mitzvah for a Baal Chayv to pay off your Baal Chayv. The context where this comes up, Rashi explains, is a Gemara in Erchim. It talks about over there how you can't collect a choyv from Yisoymim without a Shavua. And the Gemara brings over there two different opinions. Why not? One of them is Rav Papa's opinion that the mitzvah, there's a mitzvah to pay off a Baal Chayv, but you can't apply that mitzvah to the Yisoyimim when they're Ketanim, because they're Ketanim, they're not yet Chayiv in mitzvahs. The other reason the Gemara brings over there is because, I think from Rav Huna Bereder Rav Yeshua, is because, is not so much because it's a mitzvah to pay off a Baal Chayv, but because maybe the father already set aside Nechasim for the purpose to pay off, or maybe he paid it off already, yeah. Anyway, so you, Rav Papa, hold Prias Baal Chayv mitzvah. Now, that would be based on, so Rashi says it's based on the pasuk that it says you have to have hin tzedek, where in context it means that you should have, it means that you should have an honest hin measure. A hin is a measure like you have by the Shemen HaMishnah, the Shemen Zayis hin, but we also darshin from it that it means that you're hain, when you say yes, it should be tzedek, it should be honest. You said yes, I'll pay off this debt, then you need to be honest and pay it off. A couple of Rishonim point out that actually the Gemara in Bava Metzia explained that we learn a different drasha from that pasuk Gilin Ashas refers to it over here. So instead, they say there's a different pasuk from which we learn that the point is, Rav Papa learns from a certain pasuk that there's a mitzvah to pay a Baal Chayv. So now the question is, Omer lo nichali de'eved mitzvah mai? What if the loiva says, okay, so I have to do a mitzvah. I don't feel like doing the mitzvah. Then what? What recourse does the Beis Din have? So now on the face of it, the question is, does Beis Din have the right to force him? But Tosfos says obviously obviously they can force him. The question is, one explanation Tosfos says is we're referring to this case of Tola Ma'osa Ba'orit Gechavim. If he claims that the money that he has actually belongs to a guy who invested it with him, are we going to force him? To pay back anyway? So what if the guy says, I don't want to do the mitzvah? So what do you do, according to you? Amalei, so the Papa answers, Tanena. Well, we learned in a Braisa the answer to that. And the Braisa starts by saying that if a person is over on various loisas, says, and he gets malchus, Bamed Ramamur, mitzvah loisas. So what is all that talking about, that a person gets maximum of 39 malchus, is by loisas. Abel b'mitzvah esser. But when it comes to a mitzvah esser that a person doesn't want to do, could go and sh'omim la'asei sukkah v'ein oisah. For example, we tell him, build a sukkah, and he doesn't want to build a sukkah and sit in it. Or lulav v'ein oisah. We tell him, you have a mitzvah of lulav, and he doesn't want to do it. Then we beat him as much as possible until even to the point it was in the shama going out. So in other words, there's no maximum. Now, it doesn't mean a number of achronim point out that obviously doesn't mean you kill him. What good would that do? The point is you want him to get into the mitzvah, not to kill him. But nevertheless, the point is, in other words, there's no particular maximum that, no, unlike what Loisa says, but there's a maximum of 39. Here, there's no particular maximum. You beat him as much as necessary until he's willing to do the mitzvah. So in a way, an essay is more serious. There's actually Maimarim from the Alter Rebbe and the Mittel Rebbe that talk about the deeper idea behind it. Given that an essay, you're bringing down Ur into the world, bring down Ur, the key into the world. So failure to do that is in a way much more serious than being over on a lois essay, because you're denying the world this Ur, the key that you could bring down into it. What? Krishma. there are details in it. I mean, there is a Gemara elsewhere that says that when you have a mitzvah, that matan schora betzida, where the pasuk says to do the mitzvah, and right next to it says the reward, for example, kibud avim, then Beis Din doesn't force a person to do it. Because the person, in effect, has the right to say, you know what? Okay, so I won't get the schar, I won't get arifas yomim, I don't care. So Beis Din doesn't have the ability to force them on that. But here we're talking about mitzvahs where you don't have that. We learned earlier in the Masechta, for example, tzedakah is in this category. A person doesn't want to give the appropriate amount of tzedakah, then Beis Din can force him to do that. With that said, by the way, now there are Rishonim who discuss, that Ramban discusses, other Rishonim discuss, can we maybe also force him by taking away property from him? You know, instead of forcing him by beating him up, we might as well force him by forcibly taking property away from him. On the other hand, the Rashba says maybe not. Anyway, so the answer is, Rav Papa is saying, yes, even if the guy doesn't want to pay off his debt, which I hold as a mitzvah of Daraisa, then yes, you do force him for it. Tosfos also discusses the question that maybe this would only apply to mitzvahs Daraisa, maybe it wouldn't apply to mitzvahs Darabana. One more thing in that connection, Rashi says that when we beat him is only before he fails to do the essay. If, let's say, for example, he didn't sit in a sukkah over sukkahs. Now, after sukkahs, we don't have this machinos agitates and after. It's too late already. No matter how much you beat him, he can't be yotze the mitzvah anymore. So therefore, they can penalize him in other ways, maybe, but not to, but now the machinos that you take to naturally would be just to force him to be able to do the mitzvah in the first place. They were talking about an essay. Yeah. No, it doesn't say anything about shave. No, we're talking about mitzvah saseh, kum vaseh, yeah. Yeah. No, but it's fine. But the point is, in other words, it means I'm going to make a sukkah so that you'll have where to be able to sit in on sukkahs, right? Obviously, if the guy says, I'm not going to build my own sukkah, I've arranged with my neighbors that I'll use their sukkah, then obviously we're not talking about that. Yeah, okay, fine. No, actually, it's not so simple. Actually, sukkah gzula may still be kosher. That's a whole nother discussion. That's a discussion from a separate sukkah. But yeah, the Rebbe actually once talked about in one of the early sichas about mivtza tefillin. The Rebbe pointed out, you know, people are saying, you're going to people on the street and asking them to put on tefillin. And the Rebbe said, look, you know, based on our Gemara over here, machinos agitates and nafshei, we're not going to do that. But obviously, you are very much obligated to go over to a yid who otherwise wouldn't put on tefillin and demand of him that, yeah, he should put on tefillin. So, yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. Bomine Romi Bachomim Rav Chista. Hareze gitech, what if a husband says to his wife, now the reason, this is going to be an issue in gitin, however the Gemara is bringing it in over here, because it relates to something that we learned previously on Pei Dalet Amud Beis, earlier in our sugya, when we were going through various things of dinim mominus, so we talked about, let's backtrack, in the Mishnah, we had a machlokas from Tarfin and Rabbi Akiva. If you have property that was not in the possession of the Yoshim at the time when their father passed away, can a Baal Chayv collect from it or not? So we said that Rav and Shmuel explain that the case is that the Peiros, for example, these are Metaltlin, these are Peiros Tloshim that were located in Rishus Arab. So therefore, we say that the Yoshim didn't actually have possession of it at the time, because you can't do Meshicha in Rosh Hashanah. But if it was in a simta, if it was in a side street, which is a place where people will go in order to transact business, then they could be koined at the time, and then even Reb Tarfon wouldn't hold that if that didn't become theirs at the time that the Mordish passed away. So now the Gemara is going to bring something that relates to that.
They actually have to be there to make
so no, they don't have to be there. Just the fact that it's in city Rosh Hashanah is enough.
And that's not the Katan all the time.
The pashtos doesn't matter whether they're ktanim or ktanim. No, if they're really little ktanim, maybe not, but yeah. So the Gemara says, "Bomine romi b'chomer merav chista." Hareza gitech. Suppose a husband says to his wife, "V'lo tisgar shibay el la'achas shloshim yom," but I'm making a tnai that you'll be divorced with it only after 30 days. So during those, 30 days from now, this get will take effect. Now the din is that the get has to be in her possession at the end of on the 30th day. In order for it to take effect. So, suppose that meanwhile she went and put the get on the side of Rosh Hashanah, so not in the main Rosh Hashanah, but on the sidewalk or something. And and now it's still there after 30 days. We're talking about a small town, I guess, so something can stay there for a while and nobody picks it up. So now, Mahu, what would be the din? Does the get take effect? The question is basically whether she can be koined at that time, it being in Sidur Shosarabim. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that Sidur Shosarabim is a valid place that may or may not be a valid place to make a Kenyan. So the question boils down to, do we say, because it's located in Sidur Shosarabim, that it's considered to be enough in her Rishus that it would take effect? So Rav Chista answered, based on what Rav and Shmuel said, she's not Megureshes. The Rav Shmuel Dami Tarav Shitzvurun Menachem B'Tzidur Rishus Rabim. Because after all, Rav and Shmuel said in our Mishnah that if the fruit was piled in Rishus Rabim, then we said that according to Reb Tarfon, at least the Yoshim are not Yorish at the time. We said Reb Akiva, fine, disagrees. We said the Halacha is like Reb Akiva, but still, Reb Akiva is not disagreeing on the basic concept that there's a difference between Rishus Rabim and a Simta. He's just saying in this particular case, once the Modish dies, then once the father dies, then the Yoshim Yarshin. It wherever it is, but the basic concept that a person that something that's in Rosh Hashanah you can't be koina, that Rabbi Akiva would agree with only if the person does hagbah on it. So she didn't do hagbah on it at the end of the 30 days. So therefore the gerushin would work. If it were right now, 1 second. So the sides of Rosh Hashanah, we're not talking about a simta. Sidi Rishos Rabim is more like the sidewalk or something. It's not the place where the people are mainly walking, but it's a place where when there's crowds in the street, then they'll not really the sidewalk wouldn't be a good term for it. Sidi Rishos Rabim is more like you think of, you have, let's say, the regular sidewalks that people use on a day-to-day basis. And then you have, let's say, for example, you have the areas, let's say, in front of the storefronts or whatever. People don't normally walk there, but when there's crowds in the street, then people will use those areas as well. So now the Tzidir Rishos Rabim are like Rishos Rabim, therefore the Kenyan over there wouldn't work. So the Gemara asks, Ad Rabim Megureshes Midir Rav Nachman. On the contrary, shouldn't we say that the Gerushin is valid on the basis of what Rav Nachman said? The Amr Rav Nachman, Amr Rav Avor. This is also a din that we learned a few days ago. That Ha'oim Al-Chaverim Sheikh Parazu. If Reuven says to Shimon, do Meshicha on this cow, V'loi Tia Knuya L'chad L'acha Shloshim Yoyim, you won't actually acquire it until 30 days from now. So it's like the get that he's saying that it's up in the air for 30 days, and at the end of the 30 days, the Kenyan will take effect. Well, we said we said he's koneh even if on the 30th day the animal is standing out in the meadow, which is also not his rishus. My lab hainu agam behind the tzidir rishus rabim. Shouldn't we assume that the meadow and the tzidir rishus rabim are the same thing? And therefore, if he can be koneh the cow over there, why can't she be koneh the get at that point? And the answer is no. Loin agam lechud, but tzidir rishus rabim lechud. No, there's a difference. There's a difference between Sidur Rishos Rabim and the Agam, where we can say you can't be koneh something in Sidur Rishos Rabim. That's considered more like Rishos Rabim, whereas the Agam is more like an open area that doesn't belong to anybody, where people don't regularly go, and therefore therefore you can be koneh head over there. The difference is, Bapashtos, that an Agam, people don't regularly go there. So the only ones who usually go there are the animals to graze. So therefore, it can be considered enough of a common rishus that he can be koneh over there, as opposed to rishus rabim, people are walking there all the time. And even sidur rishus rabim, Rashi explains, it means close to the walls. People don't usually walk that close to the walls because they don't want to rub against the walls. But again, when it's crowded in rishus rabim, people will use that as an overflow area. So therefore, we would say, according to this lashon, that you can't be koneh over there. So that's one version of the discussion. Ikadamli, another version of the discussion, went the other way around, that when Rami Bar Chama asked the question, then Rav Chista answered him, Megureshes Midir Rav Nachman. Just the opposite. She is divorced. It does take effect on the basis of what Rav Nachman says, because we would say, V'tzidir Rishos Rabim Ka'agam Yom. Because we would say, according to the second Lashon, that the Tzidir Rishos Rabim are considered like the Agam, are considered like the meadow. So the question is, Ad Rabba Enim Megureshes Midir Rabbi Shmuel, on the basis of what Rab and Shmuel said about Simta versus Rishos Rabim, it shouldn't work. My Rab, Hainu Rishos Rabim, behind it, Sidi Rishos Rabim. Shouldn't we assume that Sidi Rishos Rabim have the same din as Rishos Rabim? And the answer is, Loi. No, we would actually say Rishos Rabim Luchud, but Sidi Rishos Rabim Luchud. According to the second Lashon, we would actually say that Sidi Rishos Rabim, since most people don't walk there, then therefore it's similar to a Simta. And therefore, you could be koneh something that's lying over there. For example, you could be koneh with Kenyan Dalet Amos or whatever. So therefore, it is different than the Rishos Rabim proper. In general, when we have two Lashonis in the Gemara, the Halacha is usually the second one, and that's how it is over here. So therefore, the get would take effect if it was located in Sidur Rishos Rabim. You have to go check if it's still there, obviously. But if it is, then yeah. Then you're good.
Once she goes and checks and is there, she picks up.
Once she picks it up, fine. But the point is that if it had been in Rishos Rabim and she picked it up, it wouldn't help. So
it wouldn't help once she has it.
Well, maybe once she picks it up, fine. But if she doesn't pick it up, if she's just lying there in Rishos Rabim, right?
She's in the divorce.
Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says. The difference between a simta is like a sign.
I know what they do there. But
yeah.
Practically speaking. Does it mean that the bailus of the place belongs to a property as to a rabbin, or does it mean
the idea seems to be that, yeah, an agam is more like no man's land.
Today everything
belongs to the government or whatever, right? But back then you didn't necessarily have that. You could have areas. There could be, right, Taka that wasn't property of anybody, right. In the case of the Simta and in the case of the Tzidur Rishos Rabim, the point is everybody has joint ownership of it. There's not really enough bailus over the area. So we said actually Simta and Tzidur Rishos Rabim in the end were saying it does work. but the Rishos HaRabim proper is not a valid area for making a kingdom. Oh, one more thing I forgot to mention about the Machinos Agitates in Nafsha, an interesting point. The Ketsois and the Nesivos have an argument about does this dispensation apply only to Beis Din, or does it apply to any person? If you see a Yid who doesn't want to sit in a sukkah or doesn't want to take a lulav or whatever, do you as an individual have the right to do Machinos Agitates in Nafsha and force him to do it, or is it only reserved for Beis Din? The Ketsois and the Nesivos disagree with that, about that in Choshen Mishpat. Anyway, the Mishnah said, next Mishnah, the next couple of Mishnayos are all going to talk about the concept that there are cases when a woman wants to collect her ksuba, or when she wants to collect a payment from her husband, she may have to take a shvua that meanwhile she didn't collect any of it while they were married. So on Mishnah, and the next couple of Mishnayos are going to deal with various angles on that. Mishnah says, Hamoshev es ishtei chenis, if a man set up his wife as a storekeeper, a chanus really in Gemara terminology is not so much a store, but almost more like a restaurant. So Rashi describes, for example, he has peiros and wine that she's going to be selling, to customers who are going to eat it, over there. Oishem mina apotropia, or if he appointed her as an overseer of his estate. So she has rights to bring in and out peiros, to hire workers, to do all kinds of business or whatever. So now, Hareza Mashbiya calls Manshiyutze. So now the Tanakhama says that he can make her swear at any time that he wants that she didn't keep any of it for herself. So he's, let's say, either he's paying her a salary, or the idea is that eventually it'll go towards Uksuba or something. So meanwhile, she, whatever, it could be Maisiyadeh, and he gets it, whatever the case, the point is, he can make her swear that she didn't keep any of the money or any of the goods for herself. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm after all, Pilka Vali Sasa, and Rabbi Eliezer says not only in the case where he made her, where he put her in charge of his store or his restaurant, or where he made her an apotropia, but even just the fact that, for example, that she's spinning wool, or that she, where he provides the wool and she spins it, or that she makes dough, he provides the wheat and she makes dough out of it, he can make her swear at any time that she didn't keep any of it for herself that she wasn't supposed to. What a marriage, what we're going to see in the Gemara. One second. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer, what does Rabbi Eliezer say? What does Rabbi Eliezer mean that he can make us swear on such things? Does it mean that we can only do through Gilgul Shvua? In other words, in a scenario where, for example, she was a chenvenis or an apotropa, and therefore she has to swear anyway, then you can include other things in the Shvua. You can also, while he's at it, make us swear as well about Pilk of Ali Sasa. Is it that, or does he mean that even just out of the blue, he can make her swear at any time, I'll pilk of Ali Sasa, because regarding those things, in effect, she's an apotropa, and as far as those things, as far as the spinning, and as far as the dough, she is an overseer, she is a trustee. So the Gemara says, Toshma, Omru le Rabbi Eliezer, Eidanum Dorim, Nochesh Bekfifa. The Chacham answered back, Rabbi Eliezer, a person can't live in one basket with a snake, which is an expression that we had a few times in the Masechta already. It means, in other words, a person can't live that way, that at any time I'm always under suspicion, and at any time you might make me swear. So now, if you say that Rabbi Eliezer is saying he can make her swear just out of the blue, Shapur, well, then we understand what the Chacham are answering him. You can't do that. You can't have a marriage like that. Eli Amatai de Gilgul, but if you say it's only through Gilgul Shvua anyway, the only way he could make her swear on those things, if anyway she was a chenvenis or an apotropa, where the Chachamim are saying that he could make her swear on that, and Rabbi Eliezer is adding that he can also add through Gilgul Shvua to make her swear that she didn't take any of the dough or any of the thread for herself. Well, then my nafkalamina. What's the difference? She's already swearing anyway. What's it hurt her to swear on something else at the same time as well? So wouldn't that show, therefore, that Rabbi Eliezer must mean lahatchila, and therefore the Chachamim are saying you can't live like that. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. The answer is, because she could tell him, given to Kadaikas Masroi Kulahai, you're being so picky about me, you don't believe me about anything, even about the thread I'm spinning for you, even about the dough I'm making for you, Loi Matsinu, De Edu Bahandoch, I can't live with you like that. So therefore, even if it's Aliyadei Gilgul, then still that she could still have such a claim, and therefore, even if Rabbi Eliezer says only Aliyadei Gilgul, the Chachamim might say that you can't do that. So the Gemara says, Toshma, Hareishalai Potteres Ishtim in a Nedur Mashvor. Suppose that the husband did not So we haven't gotten to a conclusion yet. From this braisa, we don't have a proof whether Rabbi Eliezer means hatchila or only ayideh gerubin. But now we're going to bring another proof. Toshma. Suppose that he did not pater his wife from a neder or shvur. So we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, which we'll learn over Shabbos, Bez Hashem, that the husband can write her out a document or tell her verbally or whatever, that he's not going to hold her responsible, even if she's an apatrupa or chenvenis or whatever. He's not going to make her swear any neder or shvur. So suppose he didn't do that, says the Braisa. He set her up as a chenvenis or an apatrupa. Then, as the Chachamim said in our Mishnah, he can make her swear anytime he wants that she didn't keep any of it for herself. But the Braisa continues, loy hashiva chenvenis loy mina apatrupa. If he did not set her up as a chenvenis or an apatrupa, any yochel ashpia, then he can't make her swear at all. He can't make her swear at all, say the Chachamim, about her thread that she spins or about the dough that she makes or other things like that. But the Braisa continues, Rabbi Eliezer, I'm afa pi shaloi hashiva chenvenes, loy min apotropia. Rabbi Eliezer says, even if she's not a chenvenes or an apotropia, hareiz mashpia, calls man shiyutze, he can still make her swear anytime he wants, she'en loch isha, shaloi nasis apotropia, sha'achas b'chai baila, al pilcha ba'ali sasa. Because after all, any woman, at least one time, at least for one moment in her life with her husband, is going to be an apotropa about the thread she spins or about the dough she makes, because her husband's not always home. So there's going to be times when she's the one in charge, and therefore he can make her swear about that. So therefore he says that's the equivalent of being a chenvenis. The difference is, fine, a chenvenis is long term, this is short term, but still, Rabbi Eliezer says no difference. And the Chum say you can't live in one basket with a snake, you can't live like that. Therefore, that shows that Rabbi Eliezer would allow him to make her swear, even lachatchila, because we see clearly in the Braisa, saying even if he doesn't have any other reason because of chenvenis or whatever to make her swear, just the fact that she's in charge of the pilka and isasa is reason enough. So therefore, we see Rabbi Eliezer holds that you could do it lachatchila. Shmamina, so that proves that's what Rabbi Eliezer holds. And the Chachamim disagree with him. The Chachamim disagree with him. The halacha is like the Chachamim. Tosfos brings from a Yerushalmi. First of all, if you do like what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, you're never going to have shalom bais. And for that matter, the Tosfos also brings an interesting point from the Yerushalmi related to this, which is brought lahalacha by all the poskim. Suppose that while she's doing jobs around the house, she breaks something. Now, what's her responsibility for the household object? Is she like a shomer chinam or is she like a shomer sofer? So the Yerushalmi says in Tosfos brings that actually we don't even put on her the responsibility of a shem chinam. Otherwise, again, there's not going to be any shalom bayis. She's going to be afraid to do any jobs around the house because what if she breaks something and the husband's going to make her pay?
So she's getting paid because she gets food.
Fine, but nevertheless, if she does get food, but still she doesn't want to have to pay extra for any dishes she accidentally breaks or whatever. And therefore, the halacha is that if she breaks dishes or whatever in the course of doing her normal household jobs, then we don't require her to pay at all. Because of shalom bias.
Unless she's on.
Unless what? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then, like I said, the next couple of Mishnayos, which we'll learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, are going to talk about more of these details about when we make her swear when she's collecting her ksuba or whatever.
Again, what we were saying before, the rational reasons to differentiate between the Das Chacham and Rabbi Eliezer, like where are they going?
So the Das Chacham versus Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer, right?
I don't know why.
So Rabbi Eliezer is saying, because there's no reason to differentiate. Once you Chachamim agree that you make her swear if she's a chenvenis, because then she's a trustee over the store long term, then the same thing should apply to every time she makes dough or every time she spins thread. Because fine, for that particular thing, then she's also in charge. But the Chachamim said the difference is it's one thing when she's a chenvenis or apotropa, then it's reasonable for him once in a while to make her swear about that she hasn't taken anything. And listen, if she doesn't like that, she can always say, look, you know what? I don't want to be a chenvenis. I don't want to be an apotropa anymore. Find somebody else to manage your property or find somebody else to manage your store. But on the other hand, to make her swear every time a pilk of Ali Sasa would be Dorim Nochash Bekfifa. It would be a constant source of friction that any time he thinks she may have taken something, he's gonna schlep her to Bastion. So the Chum say you can't live that way. So that's the Chacham Svara. And Rabbi Eliezer's Svara is, listen, once you're saying that the din applies to Apatrupa or Chenvenis, then the same din should apply any time that she's in charge of something.
This one, okay.